Every episode of The Gauge is brought to you by Bill Fick Ford and the WCRA. Guys, Bill Fick Ford is the number one Super Duty dealer in the country for the fourth year in a row. You guys have heard me rant and rave about Bill Fick Ford for the absolute best buying experience in the car industry, truck industry. Bill Fick Ford's the place to go. I bet you remember the old ad where I said I was getting a new Super Duty. Well, here's the keys for that. Bill Fick Ford delivers, guys. Noble discounts, noble interest rates, the best buying experience you can get. And if you are not local to Huntsville or the Houston area, he'll deliver it to you just like he did to me. Bill Fick Ford. Rodeo Corpus Christi has nearly tripled its added prize money from 2019 and will be one of the largest payout rodeos this summer. That's $545,000 with no entry fees. Rodeo Corpus Christi will be the first stop of WCRA's Triple Crown of Rodeo. The only way to qualify for the Rodeo Corpus Christi is by nominating your rides and runs with the WCRA. You can win $1 million by nominating your rides and runs and earning points with the WCRA. Through the Triple Crown of Rodeo, the WCRA will award this $1 million cash prize to any one athlete or collective of athletes who win first place at any three consecutive WCRA major rodeos. A common misconception with the WCRA is that it is only for the pros. That's the farthest thing from the truth. It's designed for the underdogs to have their fair chance. If you feel like you have the ability to compete against the best in the world, but maybe you don't feel like it. Maybe you can't afford to go down the road for a full year. Maybe you got a job. Well, the WCRA is made for you. The WCRA has awarded more than $8.5 million to rodeo athletes in just a couple of years. To learn more, visit WCRARodeo.com and learn how you can earn a spot at Rodeo Corpus Christi and possibly be rodeo's next millionaire.
What sets Resist All apart is the legacy of the cowboys who wear the brand. These traditions are passed down from fathers to sons, from heroes to future champions. Since 1927, Resist All has been handcrafting the finest American-made cowboy hats. Generation after generation, we live it.
This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradu.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado. This is The Gauge, and I am Chance Conrado. On this episode of the podcast, we have got Jimmy Monroe. Jimmy is a 11-time National Finals Rodeo qualifier. She is a world champion barrel racer, a two-time WPRA president, and Jimmy is really good at recounting history and talking about equal monies for women and all of those factors. This is a really entertaining, very educational episode. Check it out. Well, we were talking about having you on a while ago, but you didn't want to hurt your shoulder. You got bucked off.
My shoulder. No.
Why are you still riding two-year-olds, Jimmy?
No, I didn't get bucked off. Old injury. I just have a slight tear, and I did something, you know, in my rotator cuff, and mm-hmm. I did something to really aggravate it. Mm-hmm. So it was really sore. I went in. Had an injection. They talking about surgery, but, you know, it's better, and so I'm just going to put that off.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, as long as I can.
That's the ranchy way to put it off until it falls off.
Yeah, and then have it.
Well, so I think the main things we're going to discuss is a lot of history, because you were instrumental in equal money for women when that all took place with the WPRA and the PRCA. But what, 7-time qualifier National Finals?
11.
11 times. Mm-hmm. Where did I get this? That was Derek Begay. See, my history gets mixed up. But it's gender fluid. We have to do that. It's 2021.
Yep.
Can't specify. But kind of take us back, because you have a pretty interesting history as far as yourself and your family in rodeo. You and Bud, obviously. I mean, our families have been intertwined since
for a long time.
My birth, actually. Yeah. Which makes it fun to actually get to talk to you.
Since before your birth.
Before. But that's, my memory doesn't go back that far. But someone back there does. Well, it's supposed to. But what was it initially? Because it's fun to talk history on this show, because normally mm-hmm. it's just we're talking current events and things like that. What was it that got you involved in rodeo in the first place?
Well, it was just sort of a natural. My parents, you know, had grown up on a ranch and ridden, and we had horses when I was young, and I had a pony, and we started going to horse shows, and, you know, I rode my pony, and then I had an older gelding that I horse showed on, competed in the reining and the pleasure, and started doing a little flag racing and barrel racing. But anyway, I started to learn to rope when I was 9. My dad roped, and so that was what progressed, you know, when I finally got where I was roping on a horse and that thing. I was about 10, and so I wanted to go somewhere where I could do that. So we started going to junior rodeos, and we went to AJRA rodeos, American Junior Rodeo Association, and that's where I junior rodeoed, was in that association, and went to some high school rodeos when I got to high school. I went to the high school finals and to the national finals, you know, high school finals a couple of times. And then from there, went to college at Sam Houston on a rodeo scholarship, and competed in college. And then had, it wasn't like I said, oh, you know, I want to be a professional barrel racer, join the WPR, GRA then.
GRA,
yeah,
at that
GRA
time, yeah.
At that time. And, but when I was a senior in high school, the spring, we brought a 3-year-old gelding that just had a couple of rides, and that was the horse that I won the world on in 75, and he just turned out to be a phenomenal horse. And so when I got out of college and I started to go, you know, because he had the talent and the ability that I could win on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so it was a totally different landscape back in those days for rodeo. I mean, obviously the event didn't change, but the horses were different. The way you cared for them, the way you hauled them, the saddles, everything was different, right?
Yeah, a little bit different. Mm-hmm.
And so when you got involved in the GRA back then, what was the biggest difference between the GRA and what is now known as the WPRA in the modern world? I mean, that's a huge question, I know. But
there was a lot of difference. But, I mean, a lot. It's evolved. Just like before I became a member, you know, the goal was when the women formed the organization to try to get rodeo. They had all women's rodeos where the women competed in all the events, and they had event directors. And then they started, you know, approaching rodeo committees about having one of their events in rodeo, whether it be cutting, barrel racing, or bronc riding, or whatever. And in 1956, I think, that's when Bill Linderman and Jackie Worthington, who was signed this deal that the PRCA would try to encourage rodeo committees to have WPRA events. Well, the event that caught on was the barrel racing, because that was sort of a natural. It wasn't an expensive event to put on. It was fast and colorful. The women dressed up. Crowd could understand it. It was easy to understand. No judging involved. So that was the event. And so then the job of the women who were the directors of the association was to try to get all these rodeo committees, a little bit like where the Breakaway is right now, try to get these rodeo committees to have an event, and then the barrel racing to have a barrel racing. Well, then it became part of the national finals, who Florence Urie had a lot to do with that. In 1967, they met with, it was in Oklahoma City at the old state fairgrounds. They met with Stanley Draper Jr., head of the Chamber of Commerce, and Clem McSpadden, of course, had a lot to do with the national finals. So that was a big, first they had to get the event in the rodeos, then you become part of the national finals, well, then that's a really big deal. That was one of the major milestones. Well, then by the time I joined, you know, the barrel race was at nearly, I was trying to think, that first year, second year I had a card, they probably had a barrel race at, you know, maybe 300 of the rodeos had.
How many
barrel
members were in the organization at that time?
You know,
roughly?
That's a really good question, and I'm not for sure, but I would say probably maybe 800, and
really?
That might not be right, but there were maybe not that many, but there were quite a few.
Sure.
And so anyway, so that was sort of the progression. But when I got a card, I mean, you know, it's hard to, of course, that was in 1974, but there were no electric timers. You know, I mean, there were no sponsors involved in rodeos, but that was to come, you know, pretty much in the near future. But national finals, they were all hand flagged, and now people would just, you know, barrel racers couldn't believe you'd go somewhere and run for any kind of money and not have an electric timer.
Right.
So anyway, but so that was one of the things. I went on the board in 1976. And so those were, there were two places or one place in this area where you could go and run for an electric timer.
What are you doing? Why are you jumping around? Trying to keep my composure and listen to Jimmy.
I'm sorry.
You're jumping around. Is there a spider on you?
I'm not sure it was. It looks like a black bee was on me.
A black bee.
Yeah, it's on the ground right next to you.
So there let's take care of that before it stings poor Jimmy here while she's going through history.
He's dead. Don's back.
That was really distracting, Ty.
Sorry, I was not expecting
you. See what I mean? This is not a normal show.
Wasn't bothering me a bit.
Again, I was feeling a buzzing on my shoulder. I'm like, what the hell is that?
It's still moving. Do you want to kill it, or what do you want to do, or just let it fly off? Okay.
Kick it away, and then I'll shoot it.
That was very distracting. I'm sorry. I didn't know if he was dancing, if he was listening to different music, but he was jumping around and throwing his hands in the air, and I just was like, I couldn't focus. And you couldn't see him, so you missed the whole thing.
Yeah, I missed it.
Anyways, back to history lessons.
Okay. But anyway, those are just some of the things that we begin to work on after the event was established. Electric timers. Like I said, the only place where I went where there was an electric timer was at Tommy Steiner's Rodeos. And Mildred Ferris, who's former past reserve champion and former president of the WPRA, she and her husband John worked for Tommy Steiner. And they carried an electric timer. He staked the barrels and they set up the timer. And Howard Harris back in the Northeast Cowtown, which I never went back there that much, but they had an electric timer. But that was probably the only place I can remember that actually had an electric timer. So that was the deal. I remember when we went on the board, Pam got a sponsor and Nestle purchased 10 timers for the WPRA. That was a big deal. We put the Nestle stickers on.
What do you
on
say,
the,
Pam? You mean Pam Minnick?
Pam Minnick, I'm Pam sorry. Minnick, she was vice president at the
so
time.
So people know,
yeah, Pam Minnick was vice president of the WPRA at the time, and she got the sponsorship somehow through Nestle, and they bought 10 timers. Well, you've got to, what are you going to do with those 10 timers? How are you going to get them to the rodeos so they can be used? So after some thought, the board, we came up with a plan that we would put them out with the stock contractors that had a lot of the major rodeos and things, and see if they would carry a timer. And they agreed to, but they had the people in their company who set them up wanted to be compensated. So there we came up with the $2 timer charge. And somebody in those stock contracting companies would set up the timer. So that's how we began to have electric timers. I can still remember going to a Butler rodeo, and Eugene Weekly and C.R. Boucher, who were the pickup men, would jump off their horses and grab the timers from behind the fence and just stick them out there because that was their deal.
So that's one thing that I think people would have a hard time wrapping their head around, especially if you look at barrel racing in the modern world and how it comes down to thousands of seconds very often, hundreds of seconds very often.
And we ran with the flag.
You ran with the flag or just random timers being placed kind of in a general area. I don't know if people could stomach that nowadays. They wouldn't be able to recognize
they did have stakes. To give CR and Eugene credit, they had a place, but they just jump off those horses in their shaps that they picked up in and run out there and put them
just
down.
Let's do the barrel
just
racing
like
real quick.
Let's ring them in. So, yeah, there were a lot, it is hard to believe in this day and time.
It is. Well, and when the
barrels weren't staked.
Right.
If you were up the first performance and you were a member of the WPRA, it was your responsibility to go out, and if they weren't staked, you were supposed to stake them.
Well, let me ask you this, because back in the rodeos during those days, what was the order of events? I mean, did they still place barrel racing? Because most people, that'd be a big question, is when was it? Did they do it after the rodeo? Was it the same thing? What was the treatment like?
No, it was in the rodeo. It was an event. It was even back then when they ran surveys, the barrel racing was one of the most popular events in the rodeo, besides maybe the bull riding. But no, it was run during the rodeo. Like at Tommy Steiner's rodeos, it was usually right after the bronc riding and right after the bareback riding. And then in some of the other rodeos, it was more like it is now. Then it was right before the bull riding. So it was in different, but it was always during the rodeo.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you guys were put on the backseat of the bus, if you will.
No.
Yeah. So what would make sense, right? Like if you're, which is what's nice about breakaway now, right? You've had that time period when barrel racing was introduced into professional rodeo all the way till 2020, essentially, before another women's event was added to rodeo. If you think about that amount of time, that's insane.
That's insane. And but it's a popular event. You know, I mean, God, people, the committees, you know, it's popular with the committees and the crowds. And it's just growing. It's phenomenal the way that it's growing and moving into rodeo.
Yeah, rightfully so. I mean, it's creating an interesting thing in the calf horse market, but that's a totally different discussion.
No,
but,
exactly, yeah.
It is important, right? Because, I mean, we're literally talking about half of human population are females, and they haven't been serviced in our industry outside of one event for, it won't be too long before it's a century.
Oh, no, it'll be a long time. I mean, you know, like I said in the very beginning, they'd have some other events in the rodeo. Cotton Rosser in the 80s had bareback riding for the women in his rodeo. But, right. You know, no, the barrel race has been the only event really for women only that was, you know, held in the rodeos. But no, the breakaway roping, they're much like we were all that number of years ago.
Right.
You know, the first thing, they're getting into these rodeos. I had a lady from out in the wilderness circuit tell me they have 40 rodeos in their circuit, and 30 of them are having breakaway.
Yeah.
So that's really something. So probably this year they're going to be at all the circuit finals. That's going to be something that's going to be, you know, they're going to have the breakaway roping at the circuit finals. I don't know that, but that's what I understand. And then they'll be at the national circuit finals.
Yeah.
And they're also in the tour finales.
Yeah.
They're going to be in the tour finale at Salinas, so that means they're going to have to be in a certain number of these tour rodeos. So, yeah, they're growing by leaps and bounds.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, it.
And part of the national finals, that's probably within the next couple of years.
Well, I mean, the way they did it last year was a pretty good introduction.
Yeah, exactly.
And who better to win it than Jackie? I mean, that's a perfect ambassador for breakaway, obviously. But kind of going back, one of the big pieces of this puzzle, and this is like jumping around, I know, but yes, you got barrel racing included in rodeo, which has now turned into probably the biggest or second largest equestrian event in rodeo if you just look at scale and number of people who partake in
and
it.
And entries. Yeah.
But you go to any state in the entire country, except for maybe like Alaska, and even then probably, and there's a jackpot or a barrel race every weekend in virtually every single town.
And the number of entries is something where when we were going to jackpots, if there were 30 there, I mean, that was a big jackpot. But the D system, I have to give that credit for the reason that these jackpots have grown, you know, in these events like that.
It's very inclusive for levels.
It's very inclusive, and people enter. You know, if you have a horse that consistently runs a second off or a half second off the very, you know, top times, well, then, you have a shot. Yeah.
Which is more important than ever just based on the value of 1D barrel horses right now. You know, your average, call them a weekend warrior, whatever you want to call them, the person who does it as a hobby, I mean, they're not going to be able to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to place in the 1D.
And there was no market for those horses, but now there is. There's become a market for the horses that maybe aren't the 1D horses, but they're solid, you know, 2D, whatever.
Well,
3D.
I mean, the market was good horse, right? And just the value and the way that this whole system has kind of changed as far as. It was really funny. Who was I talking to? Maybe it was Fallon Taylor. She was like, the reality is no one actually knows how to value a horse. We're just all going off based off of the last horse who was related to this horse or the same bloodline sold for. And you just start tacking zeros on and hope they sell.
That's
I mean, that's what it feels like, especially over the last decade. It's crazy when you see the value of horses climbing, but especially when you were going. I mean, what was a top NFR level barrel horse, what would something like that sell for back in those early days?
You know, I don't know, but I know I remember just being in South Texas in a high school. There was a man down there who his daughters ran barrels, and he gave $10,000 for a mare that they bought from Sissy Thurman, who was a well-known. But anyway, that was just like, oh my goodness. Of course, that was a long time ago.
Right.
But still, you know, I mean, that horse was capable of winning anywhere. But we thought that was just a phenomenal price.
Amount of money. Yeah. Yeah. Which makes sense, right? Because back then, the way you acquired a barrel horse was it was generally a reject from some other event, right? An old rope horse, an old cutter.
Well, that's what
reiner.
Most of my barrel horses were till we bought that colt. I mean, I ran barrels off my roping horses. Well,
right.
I was sort of considered myself more of a roper than a barrel racer, but that's what, you know, I rode and ran barrels off of.
Yeah, which it's totally different now. It's almost like the opposite. It's like reject barrel horses turn into the other
something
things now.
Else, yeah.
Because it's such an investment to get a good barrel horse, and if they don't make you, you got to turn them into something. But
yeah.
Going back, so okay. one of the key things, and you know what, Ty, I think we missed a big opportunity. We should have had you in here on International Women's Day instead of a male barrel racer.
That's probably a mistake. I'm sorry.
It's probably a mistake having Brandon Cole in here on International Women's Day.
It was a good episode, but yeah, we could, scheduling could have changed.
I think we missed something. We probably should have had you in here on that. Now that I'm thinking about that, that was probably a very insensitive thing to do.
For you, for Brandon Collins,
just in general. Like, hey, let's talk about one of the most controversial things in the sport of barrel racing: men competing right after he wins the semifinals. We do it on International Women's Day. Whoops. Oh. Anyway, back to that.
Okay. International Women's Day, or what?
Well, no. Well, that was kind of my only spiel on that. It's kind of passed. One okay. day a year, after all, you can't have every day, Jimmy. No.
Okay, what are we going back to?
So, talking about the money thing, right? Because yeah. that was one of, I don't, it probably wasn't a controversy back then, at least not initially, maybe, because you were just happy to be a part of it, but you guys made significantly less money at the rodeos than the rest of the PRCA events did.
Oh, yes, significantly. But there you go again. You've got to get the event established. Right. It's got to become popular with the rodeo committees. And then...
So it's one step at a time.
It's one step at a time. And so then when you are an established event, it's a popular event, you're at the national finals, you're part of professional rodeo. That's when you start to try to get, you know, purse money that's close to the men. And it was a very brave move on the WPRA to come up. They came up with the board did. I was on the board at the time, but they came up with a 5-year plan. So
what year was it? Oh, you're going to say.
I'm going to say.
I'm so sorry I interrupted you.
In 1980, we made this decision that in 5 years, 1985, we were not going to approve any rodeos that did not have equal money. It wasn't like we decided in 80 and told them in 81 they had to have equal money. It would have been a disaster. It wouldn't have happened.
Right.
But we asked all committees in 1981 to add 50%, half. And you'd be surprised how many. There were probably... Like, I know the year I won the world, there were probably 400 and some PRCA rodeos. 100 of them didn't have barrel race, but only 15 or 16 added equal money, maybe 20. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a big, and there. So anyway, when they did this, and probably not a lot more in the 80s. So in 81, they all had to have 50%. Well, that went well. I mean, you know, we got that done. And then.
Were there any committees that dropped barrel racing because of it?
Not because of the 50%, but we did lose a few when the year that they had to have equal money in 85. But anyway, in 81, when they had to have 50%, that's when we informed all the committees that in 85, we were not going to approve any, you know, rodeos that did not have equal money. And we listed all the reasons. You know, it's a fast, it's a colorful, popular event. It's inexpensive. There's nothing involved but three
barrels.
You know, 50-gallon drums, yes. And so, you know, we listed all the... And our expenses were just as much, sometimes more than the men, because the barrel racers had to haul their own horses and didn't fly. So there were all these reasons that we listed to the committee. It wasn't just something that we went and said, okay, we should have equal money because we're women and, you know, all that equal. Yeah, so, but no, we listed the reasons that we did it. And then in 85 was the year. But during that time, the WPRA, the directors worked so hard with each one of those committees. They stayed in contact. They knew the ones that maybe it was going to be hard. It was going to be a struggle. They, you know, tried to help with sponsorships. They really worked closely. And so in 85, in the big rodeo committees, they had a lot more to come up with than the smaller committees did. They had, you know, pretty big amount of money that they had to come up with. And that's when it was so good to have people like Wanda Bush came back and served on the board in Texas. And as the Texas director, and she was so respected. She could walk into San Antonio and Houston because she had run there for years and she knew those people. So, you know, we were really fortunate in that aspect. But we made up our minds. Some of them said, you're going to make exceptions. And we said, no, we can't make an exception for a Houston when we're insisting that all these other smaller committees have the same money. It's just as hard for them.
Sure.
So we did lose a few rodeos. And, you know, Cheyenne was one that was really hard because they just ran barrels on one day. And so everybody was like, oh, well, you should just approve them because they're not in every performance. But if you approve them, then are some of these rodeos that aren't in just cut down? Okay, well, we'll just have barrel racing in two performances and give them 50% of the money. So long story short, we tried to explain that to Cheyenne, stayed on very good terms. You know, we don't want to lose Cheyenne, but this is the position that we're in. So we did. We lost Cheyenne that year, I think Denver. But all of them came back. Even Cheyenne came back within a couple of years and put the barrel racing in all the performances. So really, you know, I think that year we had to have equal money, we maybe lost 15 rodeos. So, I mean,
temporarily, because they all came back.
And they came back. So it was really a brave move. And who knew how it was all going to work out? But, you know, it did. And that's another one of the milestones of the association is receiving equal money. Now, the national finals, we did. But we had to have somehow justify if we were going to be at national finals, the equal money. So what we did, our rule said that all the committees had to do was add equal money to the event that added the least money. In other words, if you just added $500 to the team roping or something, then that's all you did have to add to the barrel race to comply with what we were doing. But anyway, the way we did, we worked with the national finals. That was the first year they moved out to Vegas in 85. But anyway, we tied ourselves in with the team roping. We weren't equal to the other events, but we were. Our barrel racer could win what a team roper could win at the national finals.
Sure.
So that's the way we justified that. And we had to come up with a sponsor. And that was when Purina became involved at the national finals. Purina Mills came in, made up the money to put us with the team. At one time, we'd been tied into the team roping, but somehow we'd gotten a little less. So Purina came in, added the additional money, and we became sort of tied in directly with the team roping. But the PRCA are the ones that distributed the money. Las Vegas events gave the purse money, but the PRCA were the ones that distributed it, divided it up.
Sure. And who was it that actually brought forth the agenda to push for the equal money? Was it just a decision collectively among the members as a whole? Or, I mean, how involved in those days were individual members?
Well, it was something, of course, that the membership wanted. I mean, and they let that be known. Sure, they, you know, felt like they were an important part, just like we said, of the rodeo, and they wanted, and they deserved, you know, the equal money. But then it was the board that had to come up with some type of a plan to push, you know, that we felt like, you know, perhaps we could accomplish. So yeah, so that's, we knew that, you know, you couldn't just say, well, next year, you know, we'd like all of you to have equal money. We had to come up with some kind of a long-range plan.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I'm just thinking about what that would be like. I mean, there's no weekly WPRA newsletter getting emailed over to everybody, so I mean, it must have been quite an undertaking to go to each individual rodeo and push forward that agenda and to present that in the manner that you'd have to back in those days. I think people like us can't comprehend.
And you know, rodeos are different.
What that was like.
Yeah. And I give so much credit because the directors, it would not have happened without the directors. They worked so closely with every rodeo committee in their circuit there. And rodeos are different. You know, business and a lot of businesses at that time. And I don't think it would have worked had just what I said a little bit ago, had we just said, well, you know what? Women deserve equal pay and we're women. And so, you know, you should give us equal money.
Certainly wasn't the time to be picketing and doing things the way that they try to accomplish things nowadays.
No, that's why the way that we went at it, we had a reason and justified why we wanted the equal money. The director stayed in, even the rodeos they lost, which were very few, the directors still were in contact with those rodeos.
Sure.
So,
and at that time, were you just a member or were you actively going out and doing these things as well? Were you on the board at that time?
I was president.
You were president at
that
time.
Yeah, I was president at that time.
Yeah. So explain to people, they may not understand, they may say president, United States. So you can run for president more than one time.
In the WPRA, yes, you can run. There's not limited to two terms.
So technically the WPRA could turn into a monarchy.
Well, yeah. But the membership, it's a vote by the membership. So the membership has to, that's their decision. If they're not happy with who's ever, whether it be a director, your president, your vice president. I mean, there were 2-year terms. So if they were not happy, they did not have to continue to vote that person in.
Right, right. Which kind of brings me to my next point. Next point is you're going for a nomination to run for president once again.
I did send in a consent form if you said that you would consent to having your name on the list. Yeah. Yes, I did.
And what kind of pushed you to want to do that this time?
Well, that's a really good question.
I think so.
Maybe a little hard to answer. No, I had some people come to me and ask me if I would consider running again. And so I gave it quite a bit of thought. And who knows? I may not be running, but they asked me if I would send in a consent form for the nominations, and I did.
If you're nominated, would you choose to go through with the whole process?
Yes. I wouldn't have signed the consent form because that's what I said. If I'm nominated, I will. And I'll run if I'm nominated. Yeah. So we'll just see. I don't know. You know, maybe just willing to go in again and try to work with the board, bring the board together and see if, you know, about reaching common ground and goals and being able to work together.
Do you think there's been a lot of division the last few years that's not helping the organization as a whole or the members?
Well, of course, I haven't been directly involved. Right. I feel like this has been a tough year for the WPRA this past year because of a lot of the things that have happened. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that was a little bit the reason, you know, that some people asked me if I would run.
Yeah, because you've got a lot of experience and I mean, especially in this industry, you've really been a figurehead in it for a long time, so it makes sense.
Well, I have been for a long time. Well, no, but yeah. But no. So I think that was, you know, a little bit the reason that people came to me and asked me. And, you know, if I do run, I'll work for the betterment of the association and its members and try to, you know, help the board. President does not have a vote, but I'll try to help the board to find some common ground and work together to achieve goals that I know that they're interested in achieving.
Sure. What do you think the biggest difference between the WPRA now and the WPRA when you were actually president pushing for the agendas you were? Like, what do you think the biggest differences are aside from just sheer vast number of people involved?
Yeah, there are, you know, there are not a lot of difference in the membership now than there were in the latter. You know, the last year I served as president was in 2012 and 13. I came back and served 2 years. You know, there are differences. But in a lot of ways, I don't think there are that many differences in what the members are interested in. You know, a lot of the same things that they're interested in, goals, you know, whether it be communication, you know, with the members and working toward, you know, just working with the members and the problems that they have. I see a lot of the same things now that were, you know, things that we talked about and worked on when I was president the last time. So maybe it's changed, but I think a lot, too, it's a lot the same, you know, as far as just things the members have their, you know, things that they're concerned about, and they were the same things they were concerned about then.
Yeah, yeah. Number one complaint from a barrel racer, ground.
Communication, you know, not only with the board, with the, you know, with the committee, with the judges, you know, there's just a lot of things that are involved qualifying into these limited entry rodeos. That started to be something we had addressed. So a lot of the things that they're concerned with are the same things that, you know, we addressed.
Right.
So.
Makes sense.
Some things change, some things don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because the world modernizes and moves at a totally different pace, but rodeo is kind of like it's this collective that is stuck in time in a way, probably just because of the nature of the lives that we all kind of lead if you're involved in it in any capacity. But it is interesting. I guess if you look at it, the events don't change. Maybe the trucks get better, the trailers get better, the horses get a little faster. Horses get more expensive. Yeah. Maybe the shirts get a little less frilly. There's more riding on them, that's for sure.
Boy, really? Like the race car industry.
It is. Yeah. It's like, sponsored by Bobcat. That's a nice sticker you've got there on your forehead at this point. You have nowhere else to put them.
Yeah. But
yeah, our industry doesn't move, right? It just kind of is unchanging, at least at the
There are changes, basic level. You know, positive changes. I mean, you know, really talking about what they wear, the dress code, that was such a, you know, deal when we joined, you know, I mean, the ladies really dressed up and they had to ride in a grand entry. And that's how, if you told them now, and it's set pivot if you were asked to. So, I mean, you know, these were things now that would.
Well, way back in the GRA days, like the very beginning, it was more of like a pageant than it was an event, right? Like that was one of the things that a few people have said is it was more like a show for what women were wearing and things of that nature.
Well, women did. Yeah, yeah, they dressed up back in that time, the LeMay and that type of thing is. But, you know, the competition, that's how the WPRA was formed, is women weren't competing. It had gotten away from that because they had some terrible accident in 29 when a lady bronc rider was killed, and people didn't want to see that, you know,
right,
with women. And so they were doing more of the pageantry before they formed the GRA in its day. You know, they carried flags and were in the pageantry, and but they had stopped the competition. I mean, in the 29, in the late 20s, women roped and rode saddle broncs and that type of thing. So that was really the main reason that the GRA was formed, is the women wanted to compete.
Right.
They didn't want to just carry the flags and participate in the pageantry. They wanted to go out and they wanted to compete. And that's the reason for the formation of the GRA.
Yeah. I mean, so you qualified for the National Finals Rodeo 11 times, and some of that was in Oklahoma City, obviously. But mm-hmm. what was the experience of the National? We're all used to Vegas, right? Some of us are now used to Arlington even, which is a totally different experience.
Yeah, it was great.
You know, I'll take Vegas every day. It was fun. It was cool. It was interesting, but it's not Vegas. It's not the same. It felt more like the American, really. Just 10 nights of that over and over and over. At a baseball stadium. But
they did a great job.
Oh, my God.
For the last moment, moving it to Texas.
It was like fantastic. That. And I will tell you, for the Cowboy Channel's first National Finals Rodeo, that first night was a mess. Nobody could get on the Cowboy Channel app. But that was a little – but they fixed it. And for how, like, small the Cowboy Channel actually is, they pulled that crap off pretty amazing.
Yeah. No, they did a great job. And people really enjoyed it because there's such a time limit in Vegas. You know, you have to have the rodeo over with because, you know, you've got the casinos and people have got to get their hour 45 rodeos. But, you know, they took time.
Which was mostly CBS Sports, right? They had a specific time slot.
Well, and that and the rodeo at Vegas, or yeah, it was, you know, right, there was really a time frame.
We'll see this year what it's like, I guess. Yeah. Huh?
But anyway, with the Cowboy Channel doing it. So yeah. Anyway, but yeah, I think people really enjoyed all the interviews and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was interesting. Back to the question, though. I mean, what was
was the question?
I kind of forgot, if I'm being honest. It kind of lost me there because I was like, just thinking about
Vegas. You got to thinking about Vegas.
Yeah, I've been to Vegas. It's going to be 2 years.
This is a signature moment of this show.
What are you trying to say, Tyler?
I'm just saying this has not happened. This has happened before.
It has. He gets off track.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we'll call them squirrel moments, like a dog sees a squirrel.
No, I have those. Wait till you get to be my age. You'll have more of them.
What's my excuse now?
I don't know.
We're close in age.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
I guess I was asking how different the National Finals Rodeo. Oh. I don't guess. That was what I was asking.
That was what
how
you
different
were
the National Finals Rodeo was back in those days compared to what you've obviously witnessed year after year now.
Well, you know, the first time I qualified, it was at the old state fairgrounds in Oklahoma City. And, you know, it was still exciting. They, you know, they filled up the crowds. And, you know, people thought it was still a great rodeo, an exciting rodeo. They just televised the last two performances the first year I went. And I didn't do very well till the last three performances, and I won those last two go-rounds, and everybody thought I'd won the world. They didn't know that I didn't place in all those first go-rounds. But anyway, no, they televised, the last two. But that was different. But, you know, it was still such a great rodeo. When you put together the top, you know, 15 contestants in the world in each event, you have a great rodeo. And people thought it would just never be the same when they moved it from Oklahoma City.
Yeah, what was that like? I mean, what was your opinion? Because you were in the middle of it and a competitor, obviously. Were you against the move or were you for the move?
Well, I think everybody was just skeptical. I was already on the board, of course, by then, and president of the association. And people were skeptical, you know. I mean, even the PRCA, it was a very close vote to decide to move it to Vegas. One vote, you know, determined whether it went to Vegas or not. And people didn't know. I mean, when it's been in Oklahoma since 64 or something. Anyway, it'd been in Oklahoma a long time.
Top 64.
Yeah, I don't know. But it'd been in since the early 60s. Yeah. It'd been in Oklahoma City. And, I mean, you know, like I said, they'd moved it to a different venue in Oklahoma City, but it was still in Oklahoma City. So will it be a success? Will they be able to fill it up? You know, the crowd and everything. So I think there was a lot of skepticism. You know, of course, Las Vegas events came with the money. The first year we went out to Vegas, they didn't fill it up. the crowds, I mean, you know, they were not filled up every performance.
Yeah.
We stayed at the Sands, Bud and I did, and I can remember giving two tickets. Our parents came out on the weekends, but we didn't have anybody there, and we had to buy the tickets all the way through. So we could park our truck up close, you know. We gave two tickets to the parking.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds crazy, I know. But that's just, you know, now tickets, you know. But it didn't take them long.
Yeah.
The crowds were there, and they were filling Thomas and Mac up.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was some skepticism that they could make it work, but they did.
I wonder, it'll be interesting to see when Las Vegas has to renew that contract with the PRCA in, what, T-minus 4 years now, I think, right?
Yeah, you know, and of course, hopefully by then, things will be back to normal, and, you know.
If it's 4 years before things are back to normal.
It's going
to
be bad, but Vegas, I don't know if, you know, it's going to take a while.
They got absolutely crushed. Yeah. I can't imagine how far in the red Vegas is right now.
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to take a little time. And hopefully, you know, this year I think they're planning to have it. So that's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly needed.
Yeah. For the boost the economy and everything out there.
Speaking of, you had mentioned Bud, the talkative man that Bud is. When did you meet Bud?
I met Bud, and I was on the board of the National Intercollegiate Rodeo Association, and they had two women's directors and then a director from all the different, you know, college regions. And that's when I first met Bud. We were on the we didn't start to date, but we were on the college board together. He represented the Montana, that region up in there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I was from the South and was a women's director, and that would have been in 1975.
Yeah.
So
you had a type, Rough Stock guys, or when did that become?
No, not really. I didn't know much about the Rough Stock
guys. How did he stand out? If you're a roper, I mean, usually it's pretty, people stick in their lane. What happened there?
You know, we became friends, and we were friends for a number of years. We never went out until the winter of 1980, but we were on the board together and just became good friends.
Yeah.
So anyway, and so about 5 years later, we went out.
Anybody who knows you guys know you and Bud are very different. I don't know. Do you think Bud could do a whole podcast like you've just done so eloquently?
Oh, he might surprise you.
Really?
Yeah.
If we got into the rodeo history?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something that, you know, he enjoyed visiting and talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, I'm going to be really interested to see how the next couple months go with this whole WPRA thing, and if you do go through and get the nomination, probably hard to beat.
Oh, I don't know about that. No, I think it'll be very hard to probably win the presidential election.
You think
I
really so?
I do. Honestly, I do.
Because your competitor is very popular?
Well, I've been away for a while, and yes, I don't know who will be the competitor, but very likely it could be somebody who has quite a following.
Yeah.
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 So.
We have a huge following. Do you have anything you want to tell to them to make sure they vote for you?
No, we'll wait and see till it gets to that point.
You can speak to the people right now. This is your chance. Address the nation.
Well, if I run, we'll see about that. But
you should offer free checks. That's what presidents of other things do.
Yes. Free everybody money. Gets something.
And free healthcare. Oh, free college. Try that one. You can't do it, but you should offer it.
Yeah. It You'll doesn't win. Matter
no.
if you can do it or not.
It Just doesn't.
Offer whatever it takes.
Here it is. Offer double the money that the men get in the PRCA.
Well, that would be a very good selling point.
Yeah. It would. That's what I would do.
Okay. Are you volunteering to be my campaign manager if I do run?
I mean, I've done ads for the WPRA.
You have?
I have.
You know, I was really impressed, and then I'm getting off the subject now. But I can't think who you had. Well, I guess it's when you had Haley and your sister and Emily on. But
you were impressed by that?
I was impressed by, I mean, it was a great podcast, but I was impressed by your knowledge of the history of the WPRA. You'd done your homework.
I try to make sure I know some stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's important. Otherwise, I'll just look like a dumbass, which I don't want. I risk doing that too often.
Yeah. It's not hard to do, you know, for anybody.
Thank you.
No.
Oh, anybody.
Anybody.
Yeah. No, it is, especially when you get into such expansive things like the history of rodeo.
Yeah.
There's a lot. When they There's do a national finals rodeo every year at the same time with 15 different people in every event, not always different, but, you know, it's a lot you have to remember.
Yeah.
To be an intelligent force in the industry.
And to ask the questions that need to be asked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Which I was very impressed. Everything that your daughter said you rehearsed, you spoke eloquently. Very amazing. You'll be a great president for the third time.
Thank
you. Or fourth time. Maybe fifth. I don't know.
No. Third time.
Third time. Yep. Is the charm?
I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on, Jimmy.
Thanks, Chance. Enjoyed visiting with you.
Yes, of course. Whoa, brother, let's go down. This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content produced by Riley Chone. Our theme song is by Shay Ashire and the Night Howlers. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you guys next time.